Hello, welcome to my talk about Kubernetes configuration management. It's a beginner level talk, so the target audience would be someone who has heard of Kubernetes and hasn't used it that much yet. So my name is Klaus Attersberger. I'm working at Bearing Point Technology in Graz at the Schwarzelsee. And my Twitter handle is Psychedelic Dad, if you want to follow me. Let's start. The talk description says, this talk will give a short overview over the problem space and current options to manage configuration changes. But today, do not want to be that negative and focusing on problems. Instead, I would like to start with what I like about Kubernetes. Kubernetes is very good at handling stuff declarative. So we tell Kubernetes what we want to have. We want to have things deployed in our infrastructure. And we tell Kubernetes with my favorite command, kubectl apply, that it just should be as I say. And it feels a lot like make it so. So this is it makes a great feeling when we just describe what we want to have. And that's it, Kubernetes handles the rest. So I want to show you a short example of how we do this in Kubernetes. This is a so-called manifest file. It's YAML syntax, which is a superset of JSON. YAML is everywhere nowadays, and some people like it, some people love, hate it, and some people just hate it. I'm in a transition in between, I would say. So this is an example for an object of the type, or as in Kubernetes we say, of the kind deployment. Every manifest file looks something like this. You can define here the API version on which it depends, and this is the kind. It's the type of the object that we are describing, and the rest is standard configuration. Some of these keys you would see in any of those manifest files, for example, metadata, spec, and labels. Everything in Kubernetes can have labels, which is very useful. Yeah, that's just the first small example. So we said we declare stuff, then something magical happens, and now the state is as we desired. This magical stuff is called controllers, and this is a short, small picture, very simplified, of which way this information goes. So we have this Kubernetes cluster here, the gray box. Where is my mouse? And we interacted with it with kubectl and feeding it specs, our desired state, our description of the desired state. One example we just have seen. So we feed it this desired state, and there is a controller that watches the desired state and changes the changes that we make to it. And it also analyzes what's the current state within our Kubernetes cluster, and any difference between is the responsibility of this piece of code, which is the controller. Examples for this would be an endpoint controller, service account controller, replica set controller, a replication controller, and if I, for instance, increase the number of replications that I want to have of my pod, the smallest unit that I can deploy or handle within Kubernetes. When I increase the replication count of one pod, and the controller listens to this, and it gets this information and sees, okay, now is the desired state is replication 2 instead of 1. The current state is 1 replication, so I just start another pod, and that's it. So, yeah, and there are different kinds of controllers, and I just wanted to introduce you to this idea because it's very, very, very central to Kubernetes. Yeah. So, short recap on declarative config. We forget about how, because that's the controller's job. And we also forget about the parts and the infrastructure of our cluster. We don't know about nodes or stuff like that, usually. and we manipulate the state by declaration of our desired state. You can also do some imperative-ish stuff with kubectl. I wanted to show you some examples. You could use the rather imperative command kubectl run to inject desired state without configuring or writing a manifest file on your disk beforehand or in your repository. I would not recommend that. I would recommend the last command. So everything you should need to know about configuring your Kubernetes cluster is this one sole command. That's it. So let's move on. What we gain by doing so is, we have the declarative approach, which by itself is a great perk. And we can use the same workflows as we do it everywhere else. We can just make pull requests and do code reviews on our configuration. It's very strict and clean. It's very descriptive to handle the desired state with this manifest files. Sounds doable, right? So we just write the app, we describe its parts using Kubernetes objects, and then we apply this config by running kubectl apply. But we will see rather quickly that even small apps will require quite a few lines of code of configuration. I used the clog command, which is a very cool command to count the lines of code within a project. It also reports which language has how many lines of codes. In our case, it's pure YAML, and we need 895 lines of code to describe how one microservices demo needs to be deployed. Maybe some of you know already the microservices demo. Maybe I can see some hands. Okay, no one knows it. You should Google it. It's very cool. It's maintained by the company Weflux, I think, and of course the open source community. It's a great project to tinker with when you just need some example example application that you want to apply on various environments. Yeah. So even a small single application has very many lines of codes. So what if we need to deploy stages? So what I'm thinking of is multiple instances of our application with slightly different configuration. So we got this 900 lines of code. I hope you don't have this impulse to copy-paste 900 lines of code. and of course we could find ourselves in the situation where we need customizations of our product, and every time this happens, we could end up having like something like this, which is only two stages and three customizations, and we got quite a lot of duplication sitting there, and but of course, it's not the first time we encountered this. We had situations like this before. But my point here is, don't repeat yourself and now get to the solutions. One solution we already know are templates. Maybe you used template engines like the Go template engine or the Jinja template engine or anything else that comes to your mind. And what are templates? A template is a modification of the original source. You put in placeholders and you need to feed it with values, specifically key value pairs, so the template engine knows where to put your values within the original source. So step one, modify the original source code, or configuration in our case. Step two, you need to provide variations of your key value pairs to feed into your templates in order to be able to render your resulting configuration that you're needing. So which tools have we at hand for Kubernetes? The most popular and the most easiest, I'd say, is Helm. It's propagated as a package manager. I don't think of it as a package manager because actually it is a templating tool. It uses Go templates and it packages your templates with the value files. In this case, it's actually a package manager, okay? So a second tool that's not that popular, but I think it's almost as useful and has its use cases where it's even better, is Capitan. It's a combination of an inventory engine called Reclass and making use of JSON and Jinja 2 and CADD templating technologies. So JSONet is rather complicated, I'd say. It's not that simple like Go template engines. JSONet is actually propagated as a templating language. So maybe we start with Go templates. So here's an example using a Helm template example, which is part of a Helm chart, which is the term for the packaging of templates with value files. So what we see here is we might we might want to have a very flexible chart like this one, where almost every single line has a a placeholder, and essentially we will need to feed this template a value file that consists of a flattened representation of the original manifest file. So at some point when we on every single line have a placeholder, it is more like I don't like this manifest syntax. I'd rather have flattened out key value pairs. And this is, in my opinion, a bad practice. So there is always trade-offs. We need to balance how flexible a Helm template should and can be, and balance it against how useful or how useful it is in regards of reducing code duplication. So we move to an example soon. So I wanted to show you a short example with the Git service. Who knows Git? Okay, that should be way more hands. Git is a very cool Git repository manager. And this is the configuration, or the tree of the configuration files. So, and this part from here down. So we have a values file and an example value file, and these are the components, which are templates. And so in this example, we're seeing this template is very flexible. A better example would be the microservices demo that I mentioned before. They provide a Helm chart too. So in this example, we see we've got way less placeholders. Maybe we would find ourselves in the future with the requirement to add more placeholders. This might actually be a real use case because there are certain hard-coded resource limits configured for this service. And yeah, it's always trade-offs. I just wanted to show you that the longer such a chart exists, the more flexible it gets naturally, and essentially that leads to having a values file that's as long as the original file, but with less syntax. It's So the downsides of templating: we need to template or change the manifest files. Which is work, but it's not the real downside that I'm thinking of when I'm telling you this, because when we change the template, when we change the manifest files, we lose the ability to easily upgrade once we discover that the original manifest files got developed to a new version or something like that. And we need to provide the values. And as I said before, once we... Ah, you don't see anything. And as I said before, once a project gets a bit of age, we duplicate the code within the value files, which is a bad practice, in my opinion. So don't repeat yourself. Easy upgrades. And a third term that I wanted to mention here is inventory. So we have already, we might have already experience with tools like Ansible or Puppet or the likes. They have all some kind of ability to handle the configuration that makes your application instance special. So it reduces these value files to the essence of difference that it has to the original configuration. So it's not that bloaty, and it actually reduces the code or the configuration needed to the essence that is required to make the distinction that is makes your instance special. So templates help with the don't repeat yourself thing with the original manifest files. We don't need to copy them as a whole, but we lose in this process the easy upgrade feature. And some tools help us with the inventory to reduce the value files that we've seen before. So there are different kinds of apps and workflows, essentially two. One is bespoke apps. Bespoke apps are apps that you build yourself, and this term is originating from the clothing industry, where you tailor a suit. It's a bespoke suit when you took measure with the tailor. And the second category is common off-the-shelf apps, which would be something like a CI server like Jenkins or an Atlassian product like Jira, Confluence, and so on. They have different workflows in this context, because in common off-the-shelf apps, there is already a configuration that evolves with the version of the product. And in bespoke apps, we handle the source code and the configuration to deploy it ourselves, and we never find ourselves in the situation of upgrading our customization to the new version that got released upstream from the third party. So this is a huge difference in handling the configuration. So this looks something like this in the case of off-the-shelf apps. So we got a Helm chart. This is the green bar at the top. And we forked this Helm chart for our own purposes. So maybe in the original Helm charts, there weren't that many placeholders within the templates as we needed to make our application deployment. And so we forked it. But every single time we want to upgrade to a new version that got released upstream, we need to reconcile this update with upstream and our changes. And we over and over apply the same development changes that we've got in our repository and need to resolve those conflicts. So that's quite some work. The better approach would be if we had the ability to just patch these files without changing them to templates that we use. So we just use the upstream files and don't change them. And we change the values within these files without actually templating or adding additional placeholders in the original files. So what I want to say is, don't fork, patch. I shamelessly steal this picture from a product called Ship. It has an open source core, but also proprietary parts. It depicts basically what I'm talking about. So on the left side, we have a Helm chart and custom values that represent the resulting configuration that we want to apply. And on the right side, we define this this chart as a base configuration, and define some patches. And the result is the configuration that we actually want to deploy on our systems. So what's the tool to do something like this? The tool is called Customize. So it's a magical thing again. It's templating without placeholders. And Customize, that is because Customize knows where to put the values itself. We don't need to tell it. Customize, it knows itself. So Customize has some sort of DSL feeling when using it, so but it's not that complicated. So this ain't templating, but I don't care. It's a good thing. A short demo. So before I show you the code, we got in this part the original chart, which are templates and the components and the value file. And I can use Helm to generate manifest files from this Helm chart, which doesn't include any placeholders anymore. So now I generated these files within a folder base. I hope you can see this. And besides this base folder, I need to provide some folders for overlays. That's a term in customize. So we define patches for the dev stage and for the prod stage, and each overlay needs a customization YAML file. And in this customization YAML files, I define which are my bases. I could have multiple, but in our case, it's one base. And I define also the patches that I want to add to this configuration. So in this file, in this case, I have prepared something. So I defined the base, which is relative to this overlay. And I defined to add a special label, customization with the value def, to all of the components. And I wanted to have the HTTP and SSH services within this chart to use a slightly different configuration. So I specifically wanted to have a different type of service. I wanted to change the type of service to NodePod instead of cluster IP. And yeah, that's it. So if I want to deploy this to my Minikube, I still have my old deployment running. Customization. Deselect. I could just attempt to change the files and deploy a different instance.
So now I should have a running instance. So we see I have two GT services running. And if I query, for instance, the HTTP services, okay, rather complicated. this is my GT running in my Minikube cluster. So the patch tools that we could use in our workflow are customized, of course. Helm template, as we've seen, to generate manifest files that contain no placeholders. And we could use a tool called SHIP. I mentioned it shortly before. SHIP automates the detection and preparation of updates. So it listens to the upstream and listens to releases on the upstream side, and once it detects an update that you can rebase to, it notifies you and tells you, okay, there is an update, and it also creates a pull request within your repo, and you could review the changes and just apply it, and that's it. It's really cool. So we got two different workflows that I wanted to mention. So one is for the bespoke configuration workflows, where we do not have any upstream repository that we depend on. And the developer just commits and tags within your own repository. And he iterates on the versions by adding changes mostly to the base configuration. You should always aim to put as much as possible into the base configuration to reduce code duplication within your different instances. And you could have a bot that just listens to your changes and automatically applies any changes that you commit to your Git repository, and voila, you have GitOps. The workflow using a common off-the-shelf application and keeping it up to date is slightly different. As I've said before, you have an upstream repository and fork it, and the developer now needs to make changes to the fork, and I hope way more often to the to your own repository using overlays. And usually it's the same repository, but you could use subgit or something like this. You work with pull requests on your configuration, and once you notice that upstream has an update for you, you could rebase on the new version. So this is depicted here. Occasionally rebase your fork to be up to date with the upstream. And the rest is quite
the same as before. You could have a bot that listens to your pushes to your repository and applies it to your Kubernetes clusters. So that's it. Any questions? Mind blown. If no one asks questions, I could ask myself a question if you're interested. How many of you know, have heard of operators in Kubernetes? Okay, then this doesn't make any sense to ask for it. Any questions? Yep.
How is the resource management? I saw that some examples
Yeah, this. Okay. Okay. So the question was. I guess the question was, how do you do resource management in Kubernetes? Okay. So this is an example. I guess you're referring to this example that because I've shown it before. You simply write a spec for. This is a deployment manifest file. So a deployment manifest file is very similar to. It's a configuration for the replication controller, and the replication controller is responsible to. Schedule workloads. And your workloads on Kubernetes are pods. And pods consist of Docker containers. So this is the unit where this gets configured. So it's actually a C group configuration on the container level. And you know, Kubernetes handles this for you. Pardon me?
He handle, for example, if I provide ask for too much resources, is he smart to enough to stop the process? For example, if too many resources would be
I think your task would not get scheduled.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and one more question. What does the replicas mean, the first parameter space?
I already mentioned it in the talk. Replicas is the number of replications of one container. So if if you want to scale your static site hosting web server and want to have 2, 3 or more replications of your
port,
then it schedules that many.
So this can't be changed on runtime, for example, if...
Of course, it can be changed, but you should not mix up the technique with which you configuring your desired state. So you should not handle the desired state on the one hand by curating your manifest files, and on the other hand mixing it up with something more dynamic like an operator.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a thousandth part of one CPU. It's actually almost a third CPU, so to say. Of a virtual CPU, as a it's. It's the core that the operating system sees when you're listing them. So it's one virtual core, regardless of what underlying hardware you have that results in this core. Any more questions? Okay, then thank you.